Swappers, and we're here to make you listen to movies and watch games and stuff. Oh no, that was the wrong order, but it works anyway. Hello!
Hello!
That was not in the right order in my brain, but it kind of works. You can watch games and listen to movies. I guess you could do that, right?
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want to do. You can be whatever you want to be. So, Weird Record Swappers, my name is Gabriel, that's Viking over there, he's sitting in his chair, I'm sitting in my chair, and this is the Record Swappers, we trade the records.
Are you done yet?
I'm just doing a joke because the movie's so fast paced in some places, you're like, oh my god, what's happening?
Oh yeah, the cutting in the first 20 minutes of this movie is...
It's really fast.
it gets my old ass a headache.
Yeah. It's a fun movie, but also a lot of shit happens. But it's good for rewatching that way. But like I said, in slow motion, we're the Record Swappers. We trade a record, and we talk about it. And today we're doing Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the soundtrack album, which we'll get into later today on this episode. But first, we're gonna do what we always do, I think. Which is some black artist recommendations.
Yeah.
So you go. You recommend somebody.
Okay. My recommendation for this week is a band called Big Yoni. Yoni.
I actually didn't see how it was spelled, so I cannot concur. No. Or
I was sure about it until I said it out loud, and then I'm like, is it spelled like that?
Oh, that's always
Big Yoni. Yeah, I would say like
Big Joni.
Yeah, with
a J and not a Y.
Yeah,
because if you say Yoni, it kind of sounds like it's with a Y.
Yeah,
English is hard.
Yes, speaking of English, they are from the British Isles, and it's a black all-female feminist punk band.
Yeah,
and they are awesome, and they're fun.
We're both going to the islands today, aren't we, huh? That's interesting to know.
I didn't know that, but indeed.
But yeah, they had a cool sound. It's very hard. There's something about their sound, and you don't always have to have this feeling, but sometimes you get it, and it's like, this reminds me of something else, and it's bugging me. I like this sound, but also it's bugging me that it reminds me of something else, and I can't remember what it is. That's always a good and bad feeling, because that means you like the music you're listening to, but you can't remember the other thing you did like. The brain, a wondrous place. And speaking of my brain and who it wants to recommend today is Emily Sandé, who is a British singer-songwriter from Scotland, from Aberdeenshire. And I actually have a relative in the city of Aberdeen, so I guess that is... lies in the Shire, I guess. In the Shire. And she's an R&B soul and some gospel in there too, but R&B and soul sound she has, and it's a very wonderful sound, and I really like her her music, but her voice, it has like a duality to it, very emotional but powerful. The one we checked out today was the Spotify session from 2012. It's one of my favorites, because it's always nice when you can hear the artists talk and just chill with their music, and you have a small, intimate group of people, because those crowds weren't that big, and it's very nice. I also found out she has won 4 Brit Awards over the years, which is kind of cool. The Brit Awards is something we've been talking about now and again.
Yeah, especially with...
One was, I know we... kind of talked a little about it with Queen, because they had and then also with your pick,
but then I'm blanking on the name.
Oh my god,
all I'm thinking about is Moving.
Hedra Small and the M-People.
That's so
and
easy,
and it's not her group, we're just saying Hedra Small because she's amazing, but yes, M-People, they have all the money. Me and Viking are both feeling the New Year blues, I was gonna say the Swedish summer blues that every day is either sunny or the other day is full of snow.
Oh yeah, it's,
we love this country.
It's springtime sooner. Yeah. Like it's yeah, like
it's not summer. But I saw a TikTok of somebody in Sweden like, oh, it's 10 plus degrees, but it's really freezing out. But sun, let's go sunbathe.
Yeah,
that's the Swedish country. So if we're a little chill today, that's why, you know, we are not getting enough vitamin D. So.
Also, I had a big pizza just right before this, so I'm kind of in a mellow food coma.
I had tacos.
Yeah,
you've ever had tacos?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Oh, I almost forgot about this because we haven't recorded in such a while. But we should also do a little 6 degree game. Turn up the heat or turn down the heat. Wait, 6 degrees in... This is Fahrenheit, right? The who sampled would use, right?
It doesn't have... It's degrees like, you know, 90 degrees.
Yeah, but you could say, like, 90 degrees Celsius or degrees.
Yeah, you can use it in both sentences, but so, I think they think about the degree as the mathematical, like, angle.
Yeah, okay.
The degree on an angle.
How much would 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon be in degrees of Fahrenheit? That's my question now.
800 degrees.
Minus 14 Celsius would be 6 degrees Fahrenheit. So so next time we do this game, we have to do 14 degrees. The jokes from Gabriel. Viking has missed them. So we're doing from Shirley Walker, who did the Batman original motion picture soundtrack. I hate having to say that.
The Batman Mask of the Phantom?
No! Yeah, two Batman Mask of the Phantom. The original motion picture soundtrack.
Yeah.
The OMPST. And how many steps do you think that is, Viking?
I would guess about 3 steps.
You're wrong already. There's
okay.
Two steps.
Okay. But I don't really know how to get there. But there's probably some sort of like movie soundtrack in the middle.
There's some movie soundtrack.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Did you hear the people so specific?
Young Carpenter. Escape from LA, I would guess.
Okay, so. No. Christmas with the Joker / Jingle Bells Batman Smells. Remember that one from the TV show? Jingle Bells Batman Smell, Robin has an egg, or something like that. By Shirley Walker and Mark Hamill, was sampled by in Jingle Bells One Horse Open Sleigh by James Pierpoint. And Jingle Bells One Horse Open Sleigh by James Pierpoint was sampled in Hot Wax by Beck.
Oh.
That's a weird.
Okay. Yeah.
That's really weird.
Sure. Sure. I believe you.
Yeah. I mean, that's really weird. I haven't heard Hot Wax a lot, but I've seen this album. I've known I've heard the real deal from Beck Hansen. Now I just want the group Hansen and Beck to do a group called Beck Hansen. Viking's not having my jokes today.
I'm not really having you. And I just realized a fun little connection with Big Joni and this podcast.
Big Joni?
So, they in 2018, released an album.
We do these here.
And they released it on the Daydream Library, which is a record label. Do you know who owns that record label?
Sonic Youth.
Yeah, you're almost right. First and More.
Yeah, but that made sense.
Yeah.
That made a lot of sense. Actually, that makes so much sense because it has the same name. Like, oh my god. Okay, are you ready to jump in, I guess?
Yes.
Into what we're doing today. So, last time we did a movie, I had some movie thoughts and movie notes. I don't have a lot today because this movie is wider known and more of a, but it's kind of fun that both of them are cult / fan adored movies. But this one I think is a little more watched over the years than Batman Mask of the Phantasm. So we're not gonna talk a lot, but I do want to say I always had a thought about Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and every time I see it I feel like it's that belief segments more in my brain, and it's kind of almost a classic whenever you watch it. You can watch it in this year or in 20 years from now, but because it's segmented in references in pop culture, video games, and music, and it's a graphic novel, and it's so in deep in that kind of scene, it doesn't feel like it's like a time period movie. If you set the movie in the middle, medieval times, it will always feel like, oh, I can watch this whenever because it's set in a certain time.
Mm.
And I always get that feeling of this movie. So it's going to be interesting to see, because now it's had its 10-year anniversary, and we're going to talk about that a little more, but see what happens in another 10 years and another 10 years if it's a movie. Because as far as I can see or hear when I watch the movie, there's nothing that stands out to me that's too bad in the way of, like, old movies sometimes, you know, they say something, and there's, like, one or two... But
I would disagree, but...
There's, like, one or two things that you could talk about, but in the big general thing, I would say mostly it's steeped in its own scene, and I think you can watch it whenever. But it has some stuff, and I don't know if it has with the movie to do or Brian Lee O'Malley's graphic novel. But that's my general thought. Then you can always, like, nitpick stuff with plot holes and character stuff. But in general, it's one of the most, like, later year, and I do these in bunny quotes, in quotations, perfect movie in the way that it wants to do a certain thing, and it just does it. And it's very tongue-in-cheek, but it works for what it is. So that's a movie. And I also like that every time you check out some facts for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, one of the things that comes up is Edgar Wright talking about making this movie as a musical, but the musical scenes are fight scenes instead. And that's why nobody ever talks about, like, oh my god, they had a big fight. Because in a musical, nobody looks at Gene Kelly, he says, and like, oh my god, that was a cool dance you did. I just thought that was a fun overlap too. Do you have any thoughts about the movie? Movie?
Well, I can talk about the movie. I have a question to you. Before viewing this, podcast,
yes,
when did you see it last?
When I saw it last, probably 2 or 3 years ago, I would say, because okay, also it's in 2021 now, so I have to think. Or but I think I saw it like maybe 2018 or 19. One of those years, I'm quite sure I saw it, because it's one of those movies that's like a popcorn movie for that you can throw out, you know, and just eat some popcorn and chill too, because you know what happens. But it's fun ride. It's like a Marvel movie or DC movie, you know. I can throw it on and watch it again.
Yeah, because I think the last time I watched it was 2013, 2014, somewhere there.
So 8-ish years ago.
Yeah, and like, I remember having a lot of love for this movie. But boy, rewatching this was kind of hard for me.
Okay.
I kind of found it
cringy.
There's a lot of like things that Michael Cera's character does that.
Oh yeah, that part
is not okay, and kind of like, yeah. And also, I think,
I mean, his character is a straight up douchebag.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a womanizer.
Yes, and also, like,
But in the movie's point, I think that's actually a plus, because it feels like there should be, and I don't know if they didn't get into it, but I feel like the movie wants to have like a whole duality with its character, that it looks like he's a good guy, a protagonist, and a white good guy, white savior good guy, but it turns on him and shows that he's a douchebag, and it wants to still think he's a douchebag.
Yeah,
but he has room to change. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, but his.
The comics are better in that story.
Yeah, I haven't read all the comic books, but
Nani?
But yeah, like the whole like, like he doesn't. It's like. He doesn't get a redemption arc in any way, I feel like. But also like the homosexual bits are kind of grating also, because it's like
uses two of my like worst homosexual stereotypes.
Is one, which one are they? Because there's
it's like the fear of like, oh man, there's a homosexual man and he gonna turn you gay.
Oh, because he steals their boyfriend.
Oh yeah.
Stays it. Well, I don't know if that's the thing I would pick for, but I guess I honestly don't actually even think that's haha funny. I just think that's kind of like, because I think that's also maybe supposed to be like a little tongue in cheek in a way, like not only that with the gay stuff, but like, ha, I got your boyfriend and stuff like that. I don't ever.
Yeah.
I just feel like because it's Kieran Culkin, his acting just, that's the thing that makes it funny for me, because he's such a great actor.
Yeah, I mean like.
And how he does that, and how he just is a sarcastic bitch, and I mean this in the best way, like when I say bitch, like sarcastic bitch. Like all for the movie, with especially with in the same scene with the band, like.
And I I love Wallace, and like there's some great scenes with him, but some of that just rubs me the wrong way. Way now looking back on it, so yeah. But I just had two quick kind of reviews.
Yeah. But I just want to say that's already it's quite interesting, because I just go into this like a popcorn movie. So I don't ever like try to go into it so deep when I watch it. I think that's one of the things for me which makes it like, oh sure, whatever.
Yeah.
With a lot of the stuff, because even Matthew Patel is one of the things like I always feel like, is this okay or not okay? Because, with a lot, but also I never knew at the time, and I've learned now that there is a lot of Indians who come from the country India, or like from that part of the world, and a lot of is it South Asian, I think you could say, that live like Korean and stuff that live in Canada. I didn't know there was so many. I always, when you think about a big immigrant country, you don't think Canada, you think more America.
At least not for that part of the country.
Toronto actually has a lot, at least.
Yeah, I know, but that. But like, as we discussed before, on this podcast, there's a lot of people from Haiti and the Caribbeans in Canada.
Keep with your reviews.
Yes. So this is part of a review. I won't read the whole thing, but it kind of uses the same kind of structure, and ends with, I would like this movie, but I think about the since-deleted tweet that said Scott Pilgrim made an entire generation of men undateable, and every day of my life. I would like this movie, but the tweet is true, and now Scott Pilgrim-looking ass motherfuckers think I'm a manic pixie dream girl and ask for my number while I'm stoned at the city Target. I'm willing to be a manic pixie dream girl for the right person, and you're not him. Dude with the Pickle Rick pin on his messenger bag.
The whole manic pixie thing, I saw so many videos which is like how Scott Pilgrim / Ramona Flowers have destroyed and pop culture, which is like, it's so hard to watch those things and think about it, because what is destroying or what is like just homaging or liking something. But yes, the manic pixie also character has been very well spoken about over the years with how that's portrayed. So that's a whole other bag of stuff.
Yes. So the second one is, watching in 2014, Scott is quirky and relatable, hopeless romantic. Watching in 2018, Scott is a possessive cheater with a victim complex. Watching in 2021, Scott is a nuns.
It's a very... I mean, it's also weird because the graphic novels were created a lot, and they're different. I haven't read them in a long time. Last time I probably read those were 2015 or something, because the last one was on its way when they were making the movie. So it was a couple years after when everything was out. And I think the game was coming out also around the time, maybe. But yeah, so I know there's a lot more, like Steven Still's character is much more broken down there, because he's actually... gay or comes out as gay and has a relationship with Wallace. And there's a lot, and there's a line in one of the songs that maybe hints at that. And there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, I can't say a lot, but it, I do agree that there's some like 90s white boy feeling over the whole Scott Pilgrim. And I guess those, I want to, when I say there's good to that, there's good in like, you know, how those 90s movies made you feel.
Yeah.
But also there's bad to that, I guess. But yeah. I think it, I'm not going to say that facts are not facts, but I think it, it very much also depends on how you watch a movie. I always, I just go into it thinking it's a popcorn fun roller coaster of a movie. So I don't think of it like any political, any like themes or something that they want to say that has value to it, you know, for me.
Yeah.
But I can agree that you, it is easily, you can easily find and see those things and they may absolutely be true.
Yeah. But regardless, one thing we can agree on is that this soundtrack rocks.
Yeah, it is a very good soundtrack. And it has a very, very many different things to it. And I guess we'll have to get into it with some first impressions. But I don't know. Do you want to... I want to take first impressions out of the way. Sometimes we do it after we do some facts. But I honestly want to talk about it a little now because you're mentioning it. Is it fine to... to bring it up?
Yeah.
And I totally agree. It is a whirlwind of a soundtrack. It slaps a lot and it has that garage band style that we've talked about before. You know, the homemade music that you just make out of your, or not only garage, but also your room. You know, Don't Come Knocking and all that.
Yes.
All that jazz. And I also like how the soundtrack shifts so much that it also has layers to it. You know, when you look at some of the names or styles of music, you can be a little amiss to think that it maybe won't go deeper into like certain feelings and stuff. I like the music is about relationships and stuff, which grounds it in one overarching theme, I guess, in a lot of, which is by design because of the movie. And it's also fun to see that Brian Lee O'Malley was the author slash creator of the comic slash graphic novel, was consulted on the movie and with the music and stuff, and he wanted to have certain people on it. And that's kind of nice to see, even if you don't like maybe some of the choices or you don't like something behind like the movie or blah, blah, blah. It's very nice at least that somebody who creates, you know, the movie will talk to the creator and say, hey, what's your opinion on this and this and that? And then they'll have to, of course, understand because they've sold rights that there will be other creative differences. But it was nice to see, especially the behind-the-scenes featurettes that you can find on YouTube, seeing Edgar Wright and Brian Lee O'Malley talking, and Brian Lee O'Malley's sister also showing up and stuff like that.
One thing we need to also kind of talk about before moving on.
This is in your first impression?
Kind of. It's a movie thing, but...
But
I thought it was kind of funny, because one of the things I was worried about rewatching this movie was the whole vegan thing.
Yeah.
But I thought that was hilarious, and that part still holds up for me.
The vegan police.
Todd
Ingram.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it.
But what about the music, except for it rock and rolling?
I mean, like, my first impressions is kind of hard because they were so long ago. But...
in the years of yonder.
Yeah, but like, for the songs made for this album or like for this movie, they have a really good energy to it.
Yeah,
like they are very electric.
Yeah,
we're gonna use some cool words.
I also like that it's very thought out, not to be thought out, and we'll get into this. But
yeah,
but the stuff that Beck has said about like creating music that is made by novices while you knowing so much about music and like getting that common ground and stuff like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's sloppy, but it's also tight.
Like. Yeah, And it's supposed to be sloppy and on purpose. Yeah. It's got slop and it got pace. You got any certain stuff about the soundtrack in general?
No.
So I have some small facts.
Bring it on.
So of course it were, like I said, it has a 10-year anniversary, and it was released originally in 2010 August. So that's not so far from now. Many months ago. And they just released, or they released a while ago, vinyl and probably CD and all that bullshit. But the vinyl anniversary bullshit, which has actually the first time released on vinyl, the score also to the movie, which was made by Niall Goodrich or Godrich. But it's the first time that's on, and you get the whole thing. So you get the score and the vinyl, and some songs that were not on the soundtrack before is now on the anniversary soundtrack, which is cool. I like that a lot. I also found this out, and we can talk about this at the top, so to get it away. And it's a movie / music fact, and it is that Alison Pill. Why didn't I write down their first names too? Weber, Pill, and Simons is what I wrote down. I didn't write down there. So is it Mark Weber, Alison Pill, and Johnny Simons? Brain, baby.
Oh my God.
The brain did it all. The members of Sex Bob-omb basically had to learn to play their instruments, and Michael Cera, who actually did know how to play his bass. And it's actually they who sing and play on the soundtrack, which is really cool. Which I like a lot, because it gives another piece of authenticity.
Yeah.
Authenticity! Authenticity. I can say it. Viking, you know the word?
Authenticity?
Oh, thank you. So thank you so much. Viking will now interpret the rest of my words. And I also want to talk at the top, like, for all these songs, we're going to get into it, but the whole thing about Beck, actually, I think this is a good thing to take at the top too. So you can go into it knowing when we talk about these songs. But that the songs actually took Beck 2 days to write. And he said, like we said earlier, but he said it needed to be underthought. They had to be funny, but also wanted them to sound raw, like demos, which they did. And there was some song, and I can't remember for the life of me which one it was, but they just recorded in like a, not a studio, but like a house demo, like at somebody's house. But even if you say that, when you're talking about Beck and his friends, you know, their house studio is still really good. But it's quite fun to hear that, well, like, oh, this is a demo and we're just going to leave it be.
Yeah.
And just put it on the soundtrack, which is cool. Also, speaking of people who learn to play instruments, you have Brandon Ralph, who played Todd Ingram, the bass player for Clash at the Demon Head. Actually learned to play bass, but they didn't reuse his bass for the movie or the soundtrack. They just, you know, used the metric stuff. We'll get to
metric.
Is there anything else that we want to talk about? I'm reading another thing that Beck said was that when he was writing the songs, he was looking at the frames from the comic book to get certain, like, feelings, and wanted it to be genuine, which I thought was very nice.
Nice.
But we are gonna go into 1, 2, 3, 4. We are Sex Bob-omb.
Yes.
Wait. 1, 2, 3, 4. My beautiful maracas that I found that you can use as drumsticks?
Question mark.
So, Viking, are you ready to get pumped? Because this is...
Yeah.
Does this get you pumped, or does this get you pumped?
Yeah, this is fantastic. This rocks. It's just like the Kim screaming, "We are the Sex Bob-ombs."
Yeah,
is just so iconic.
Alison Pill.
Yeah, and like.
Speaking of Alison Pill, I saw that they did the, you know, YouTube thingy.
Yeah.
And she did that opening for the YouTube anniversary where they have the table read, and they're like, 1, 2, 3, 4. And it was so cute. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I saw that. And it was so weird seeing her with blonde hair doing it. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. But yeah, Kim just amping up.
Yeah.
Did you check out some of the lyrics? Because... Oh no, wait, I'm thinking about something else.
Yeah, I was gonna say, there's not much lyrics to this one.
Technically, they are lyrics where they just go, yeah, this was the one. Laminate the stasis, mama serpentine, I got my breath for Liza, and my body's clean.
Yeah.
I love that it rhymes too.
Yeah, it's like nonsense.
Yeah, it's just nonsense, but it's so deep.
Yeah.
But also, it's, and this with what we said about Beck and the stuff of writing these, but it's, the song is so easy or simple, but it's so effective because it's these like strong chords and just like the screaming, the yan, and the feeling. And especially when you watch the movie and you have the actors jumping around and doing stuff, it's fun. The second song?
Yes. It's Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And it's made by Plumtree.
Yeah, which are...
A Canadian indie rock / power pop band that are from Halifax, Canada.
Yeah. Halifax, Canada.
They were formed in 1993. And yeah, so this is a song that Brian Lee O'Malley got the name for Scott Pilgrim from.
Yes, but did you also know why the song is called Scott Pilgrim?
No.
So they had one friend that was named Scott Ingram, another one was like Todd, let's say, Pilgrim. And so they took their names. And it's quite fun now, and that there's also an Ingram in the graphic novel. So there's a Scott Pilgrim, but also an Ingram,
yeah.
Like so.
Yeah.
I can't remember the Ingram's first name. Maybe both were named Scott. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I thought that was fun. In this song, Scott Pilgrim by Plumtree, the overlapping singing that they do, I really like a lot.
Yeah.
It kind of, I don't know, drives you wild, but in a good way.
Yeah.
But also like you're speaking, talking to yourself kind of feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun, poppy, catchy song. It kind of makes me wish it was the 90s again. I was cruising down the street on a skateboard again.
It's so weird that I actually could skate and do tricks, and now if I stand on one, I literally almost break my feet somehow. I don't have the center of balance anymore. No. I also know how much easier it is to die now. I think that also doesn't help. When you were young, I'm like, yeah, I can't die that easy. It's fine.
No one ever dies young.
Oh, man. Was there anything else? Oh, yeah. I was just going to say... it was the last, or the chorus, as it says on Genius, the "you can't stand to see me that way no matter what they do, no matter what I say." It was very emotional also, but in this, like, kind of happy, and almost happy, but like you said, with the music being so kind of upbeat. I like that contrast too. In Plumtree, you want to go to "I Heard Ramona Sing"?
Yes.
"I Heard Ramona Sing"
by Frank Black.
The easiest of people to find the information.
Yeah, about. Yes. So his real name is Charles Thompson IV, and he's an American singer, songwriter, and guitarist. So he was the frontman of the alternative rock band Pixies.
The Pixies?
Pixies.
Are they two different bands? Or am I just thinking that they used to have...
I don't know. You check that. I will go on. So when he performed with them, he performed under the name Black Francis. But during the band's breakup in 1993, which was the same year Plumtree was formed... He embarked on a solo career under Frank Black. Did you have any?
No, I was just gonna say their name is Pixies, but a lot of people like say the Pixies.
Yeah, yeah. It usually is like that.
Oh, and they have a band. They have a band called the Pixies. Who would have known? I just thought I was thinking of something else, maybe. There was a really nice lyric. Which one is it? Here it is. "I had so many problems, then I got me a Walkman."
Yeah.
I really liked it a lot. And
that's the opening line of the song.
Yeah, and they walked right in and they solved them. And it, here the song talks a lot about, according to people, the band The Ramones, because Frank Black is outspoken about liking The Ramones and saying they're one of the best bands.
Yeah.
But I just like that. Also the feeling of sometimes how music slash listening to a certain band that you like or artist can fix a situation.
Definitely. It resonated with me as a teenager that buried myself in a lot of music. So, yeah.
And also, wait, I have to take some water.
Yeah.
But also, me and Viking are doing something special. We'll get to that later for the next albums we're doing. But I put that on and I got the grooves going, so to speak.
I got
jumping up and jumping down.
You got the blues.
I got the vibes, I would say.
Okay.
More. I also just like the guitar in the song.
Yeah.
I heard Ramona sing by Frank Black, really good.
Yes.
The next song is By Your Side.
Yes.
By ba-da-ba-ba-da, the Beachwood Sparks.
Yes. Which is an American alternative country band from Los Angeles.
Wait, that was country you were listening to?
It's apparently inspired by the band Sadie's, Sadie's song that has the same name. Yeah.
If you say so.
Yeah.
If you say so.
If you know something about Sadie. I know of them, but I never really listened to them.
Yeah. First, when I saw the name, I was like, Sade? Sade is here? Why is Sade in this band?
Yeah.
It was the weirdest. I like this song. It's very cozy and down tempo, or like slowed down, or, you know, chill. Yeah. And also in the movie, they use it for some romantic cuddle time, which really fits, of course.
Yeah, I love the singer's squeaky voice.
The squeaky voice? I didn't even think about the squeaks.
Yeah.
I'm just checking if there's any
squeaky voice
lyrics I missed in it. You want to go to the next one?
Yeah.
Katrina by the Black Lips, which is a band I'm so sure I've heard before.
Yeah, you probably have. They are an American garage rock band, so it fits right into the theme of this soundtrack.
Yeah.
And they were formed in Atlanta, Georgia, United States in 1999.
1999, the turn of the century.
Yeah.
So weird to say
the year
those
that
words.
Always comes back to me.
The year that marks the other year that follows. Y2K.
Yeah. The beautiful distorted bass lines are just...
Haha! You mean bass line, or did you do bass? You did the bass
again? Yeah, the bass. I haven't done this for too long.
You're owning it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just throwing out the line. I'm just fishing for it.
God, so bad.
Not compliments.
Did you see what this song was made about or is about?
It's about Katrina.
Yeah, it's about Hurricane Katrina, which gives it another level of meaning to me because I didn't know that before. And it's very simplistic in lyrics. Like it doesn't have a lot of lyrics. It just repeats. But I feel like the feeling of the song really, really, really resonates, I think, because it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you suck, Hurricane Katrina. You really suck. You're really mean, and we don't like you. Because why you gotta be so mean?
Yeah.
Speaking of music, the guitar in this song and the like kind of screaming / wailing that they do in the song vocally towards the end with the "Oh Katrina." And why you gotta be so mean, or why you gotta be mean? I like that. Really gives it very powerful vibes. So yeah.
Yes.
But now we're going to be sad. I'm so sad, so very very sad, so sad.
Yes.
That was the song.
Yeah.
I do love that it's very short and sweet.
Yeah. All I've written for this song is so beautiful heart emoji.
Yeah. Crashing the boys. Is that boy also a girl? No, wait, that's wrong. Is that girl also a boy? Is that that's what Wallace says.
Yeah.
And also like, play something longer. But I do also love the transition into the next song.
Yeah.
We Hate You, Please Die. Like, it's so seamless.
Yeah.
It was so seamless. But also, it's not actually just made by Crash and the Boys. Did you see that? It's actually also kind of has some broken social scene in it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Do you have something about the broken and the social and the scene?
I have that later.
You have that later
when
in
they
life.
When they appear.
They actually appear.
Yeah.
Like a wild Pokemon appears, yeah. They will too. But We Hate You, Please Die.
Yeah.
I can't speak because love don't stink. Love don't stink like cotton cheese. And I hear a God in a coma freeze. Yeah. I hear my God in a coma freeze. Such a wonderful lyric. I love it.
It's just some bullshit.
Yeah. And that's We Hate You, Please Die. That's the scene in the movie where Steven Stills freaks out, right? Yeah. Because like, how are we going to go up after this? And you can just like see the bubbles or like word bubbles coming up, and then later Scott slapping him and stuff. But it's very comedic, it's very fun, and the juxtaposition of the scenes are is just really fun. I love it.
Fun gibberish.
Yes. Now we go to
speaking of real good gibberish. We're talking about garbage truck.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take you on the ride on my garbage truck.
Yeah. Wait, I'm a passenger in your garbage truck? Yeah. This is basically an Iggy Pop reference, then, I guess.
But this is because you're garbage?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
But don't you know, Viking, that another person's trash is somebody else's treasure. So it's okay.
Yeah.
They're normally found at what's called a secondhand store. Ooh! Such a bad joke. Yeah. So this is by the artist Sex Bob-omb, which is, of course, we are Sex Bob-omb, which is the characters in the movie / the band that we follow. But the writer of it is Beck Hansen.
Yeah.
You know Hansen? He's from the Hansen Trio.
Yeah.
Now, it's written by Beck, and I really, really like this song. I really do like how amazing it is, and the lyrics yet again are just so good. And here was the line that some people, according to the forums, believe that wink wink, nudge nudge, say that Steven Stills may come out as gay in the comic, and you know, and that is, I'll take out your junk and I'll crush it down. Jesus in my rear view and the highway patrol is up ahead. Yeah. In my garbage truck.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, in the comic, yeah, he's gay. He comes out as gay, and that's. But it's so weird, like, thinking about that, I guess.
Yeah.
I do. You touched it. But I did find something that is a genius annotation, so we can play. God, is it genius or not genius, Dave? Or actually, the guy is Frank, but I just wanted to do a new name. So there's a line where it's. They say, drive right through the needle's eye. And the genius annotation says, Matthew 19:24 reads that it would be easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. The Bible advocates modesty, and since the singer of this song is driving a garbage truck, he believes that he is a better person for his non-materialistic ideas and values. Is it genius or not genius, Frank?
It's garbage.
It's fucking garbage. I'm sorry. Genius annotations, you're amazing. But like, I do get it. It is the same thing. But also, I don't think he's saying that he's so modest. That, oh, I'm so modest. Let me get him to heaven. I'm driving a garbage truck.
I mean, like, if you put like five filters over this lyric, I can see where you're getting at. But that's also a lot of work to get there.
Yeah. God.
There's a lot of mental gymnastics going around.
Yeah, I do agree. I agree with the first thing being a statement from the Bible. The second thing I do not agree with being true. Yeah. God. But let's go to the younger years, Viking. To our teenage dreams.
Oh, yes. Let's go back to the 60s, man.
Yeah, I'm not that old, but let's go back to Teenage Dream by T-Rex. Yes. You gotta love that name.
Yeah, T-Rex are fantastic. And they're an English rock band formed in 1967. I just like, I just found this fun kind of thing. I don't know even if he plays on this particular song, but there's a member of this band whose stage name is Steve Peregrine Took.
That's so stupid.
Peregrine Took, obviously talking, taken from Lord of the Rings.
What is it?
Pippin's real name.
What is it? Fool of a Took.
Yeah. And I thought that was so hilarious. I had
also every time I watch that movie and he says "You're a fool of a Took," and I always think about the Swedish name, the Swedish word "Took" eller "Toker," which means crazy.
Yeah.
So it makes it even if that was on purpose or not, I don't care. It makes it funny. I have some Edgar Wright. Who the hell is Stephen Wright? You know his cousin.
But there is a Stephen Wright.
Okay, Google Stephen.
I'm gonna Google Stephen Wright. You go tell them.
Okay, so Edgar Wright said he wanted to include this song by saying, "This is one of my favorite T-Rex songs. It's epic. It's made me think of knives. It sounds like a song missing from Greece. It's so lush and symphonic. It's I'm obviously a big T-Rex fan, but this song is so grand. It spoke to me as how we feel when we're 17 and have been dumped. You need a song that sounds like the end of the world. It sounds like one of those classic rock songs that you will always be able to listen to, never matter. Oh, but Gabriel, the end of the quote was end of the world. The rest of it is your own things. Yes, Viking. Who is Stephen Wright?
Stephen Wright is a comedian and an actor.
Yeah.
He is.
Oh yeah. It's him.
He plays K Billy DJ on Reservoir Dogs and some other equipment. But he done some stuff. He's the Melma emoji in the Emoji Movie.
Isn't he in?
He's probably in some.
Yeah, this one. Stuff.
He's obviously in Son of the Mask.
Yeah, Reservoir Dogs. I think that's one of it.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh, yes, he's in this movie too, the Mike Myers movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer, which is one of my favorite underappreciated Mike movie.
Yeah.
Back to this. This is what Edgar Wright said, that you need a song that sounds like the end of the world for a 17-year-old, and I really like that. My own thoughts are it sounds like one of those classic rock songs that we will be able to listen to no matter the time or place, because it just has that amazing singing, and the guitar is fantastic.
Mark Bolan's voice is just...
Oh, yeah. Do you want to have genius or not genius, Frank?
Yeah, give me.
So the genius bio information says, this song is about how the world is losing its innocence and decency, and how all is lost from what the evil world has done to people. How even the greatest people are scum, and how the world is corrupt. It's awfully, awfully cynical. Is it genius or not genius, Frank? I guess some of those things are in there. But also, I wouldn't say it's awfully cynical. But yes, it's about the world losing its innocence and decency. Some of it, yes, I do agree. You want to go to the next song?
Yes, we're going to the Sleazy Bed Track.
Can we just talk about the name Sleazy Bed Track? Is an amazing title for a song.
Yeah.
And so the Blue Tones, which you'll talk about.
Yeah.
The name, good on you just for making up that name for a track.
Yeah. So Blue Tones are an English indie rock band. They was formed in 1993. In Hounslow, Greater London area.
Really? Hounslow?
Yeah.
Hounslow. I've never been to London, but I actually heard about that.
But it's in the Greater London area.
So oh my god, it's in the great, not the minor. Okay, go on. Sorry.
It's about all. What I have to say about the song is this song kind of sounds like what Beatles would have sound like if they started in the 90s?
This is what I was gonna riff on yours and just say this is what the Beatles would have sounded if they did Marvin Gaye's "Let's Get It On," but that's not true. But maybe, you know. Uh-huh. But "Let's Get It On" is this song. This is song yeah. is this so like yeah. Let's have some cuddle, special grown up time. I really like the lyric. All you got to do is kick, baby, kick off your shoes and lay down, because how they sing and. And play the bass / the guitar at that point. I really love it. Climb up here with me and let's forget about sleep and lay down. It's also really creepy, a little. It's a little siren songy somehow yeah. With that part. But he has that much. They have that suave, so it's, I guess it's fine. Viking, yeah. You know we live by the sea, and you know it gets boring by the sea, right?
Yeah, so I live by the sea, and definitely get boring by the sea.
Actually, never lived by the sea for a long amount of time. I used to vacation at the sea, but then it didn't get that boring. Because we had amusement parks and shit to go to.
But yeah, this song is made by Blue Red. No.
It's made by Blue Red Shoes. Sure, Viking.
Blood Red Shoes.
Wait, are those the Lil Nas X shoes that are coming out right now? We did the joke. We're hashtag relevant, Viking. We're hashtag relevant now.
Yes. They're an English alternative rock duo. Duo.
They're like us, but bitter.
Consisting of Laura May. God, I'm getting everything wrong. Laura Mary Carter and Stephen Ansell.
Yeah, Ansell.
And this song is a diss track to Brighton.
Yeah. I've never been to Brighton, but if you read all the genius annotations about Brighton, I can't do a genius or not genius about it, but I don't think they're so I get what they're saying. They're saying a lot of the stuff like, it is a big city, but it's so close to London, so the scene will always be the same if you meet somebody who's artistic in any way with paintings or music and stuff like that. I get that, and that you want to get away. But some of the stuff they write about in those annotations are not genius, I'll say that much. But yeah. I do love the inflection of the singing and how they emphasize the different words in the song. I really do love it. I wonder if I could pinpoint. Oh yeah.
What I have to say, or were you done or not?
Yeah. No, tell me.
This song is not boring.
Yeah, it's not boring.
The song has a great sense of speed and it kind of feels like you're in a high speed chase. And it works perfectly for those action scenes.
Those action scenes in the Scott and the Pilgrims.
Yeah.
Are you gonna? Do you want to go to the number 12 song, the black sheep of this track listing?
Yeah.
Which is Black Sheep.
Yeah.
And number one, it is not the black sheep of this track listing at all. Well, it depends on. Okay. We'll get into that a little. It could be depending on how you see it. But let's go that it's the song Black Sheep made by the band Metric.
Yes.
Tell me about Metric.
They are a Canadian rock band founded in 1998. There's a lot of 90s going on. In Toronto, Ontario. Canada.
Canada.
In the North American region. Yeah.
The sub-temperate zone. Just joking.
Yes.
So...
Yeah, do you want to get into...
Okay, so let me start to say, why did I say that this is maybe the black sheep of the track listing? And I stated that by saying so because this song is in the movie and on the soundtrack, but they're not the same version. Oh. On the movie, it is Brie Larson singing, and how they play is a little different. And then of course Metric does the version for the album.
Yeah.
And that is what I mean. I think it depends a lot of what you hear first, because it's basically, of course, the same song, but there are different nuances to the song. Yeah. If you hear Metric's version first, you'll probably maybe love it more than the movie version. But of course, I do love the movie version a little more because it has a cockier, confident side to it, and it's very playful from from Brie Larson and how she sings and acts. When you watch Metric and Emily Haynes singing it, she's not as, cocky and confident in that certain way and playful, but she has another feeling to it. So I do like that a lot. Yes. But I'm happy to say, for anybody who likes either or version or both, on the new Scott Pilgrim vs. the World deluxe vinyl edition that came out, the Brie Larson version is on that. And of course, the Metric version is on it. So you can have best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And when you're done with your points, Viking, I have a genius or not genius, let's just some buyer information for you.
Yeah. So, just a fun thing about Metric is that...
they use the Metric system.
This is not their first work on a soundtrack. Or actually, this came after they worked on Scott Pilgrim. But they also worked on the soundtrack of David Cronenberg's Cosmopolis.
Cosmopolis?
Yes.
We all know the Cronen and the Bergs.
Yes.
Yeah, David Cronenberg. When did that movie come out?
Like 2013, 14, something. Somewhere
around. 2012. If
this 12. Oh, okay, yeah, that's maybe, yeah. That's maybe
more. Oh, yeah, it's the Robert Pattinson one. It's
It's
the R-Pats movie.
This gonna not shock anybody, but it's a weird movie, but it's kind of fun.
It's a David Cronenberg movie. Yeah. Of course it's weird. So, do you have any thoughts about this? Which version you like more? What do you think about the song?
I mean...
I'm in lesbians with the song, just so you know. To make a stupid joke from the movie.
Yes.
The L word, Scott. Lesbian? No, the other L word. Lesbians?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, no, it's a stupid joke.
Yes. Yeah, but not that. I'm kind of fine with that. But the whole, like, because I kind of blanked on the second, like, slightly homophobic kind of thing in this movie. And that is, like, the whole, like, oh, I had a bi face, like...
It was a phase. But don't you? It was all worth it for that one joke that she was bi furious.
Yeah. that I'm fine with. But yeah.
Oh god. Okay. Whole, So are you in lesbians with the song or not? Tell me which version do you like? What's your thoughts?
To be honest, I kind of have a hard like. I watched the movie like once for this podcast. And I saw the movie like 10 times before, but I can't really like compare them two in my head. So I guess I have to go with the Metric version, I guess, because this is what I've been listening to these last couple of days.
So this isn't really the genius or not genius game, but if you want to say if it's genius or not, you can. But this is more...
Have you written this?
Of course, because I'm a genius. No, it is bio information.
Yeah.
But it's more interesting than genius.
Yeah.
Already, I'll state that. But Black Sheep reportedly went through several revisions before being... The song went through several revisions before being cut from their album Fantasies that came out. And at one point, the song had the nickname of Freddie, and being about the late Freddie Mercury of Queen, of course. According to Emily Haynes, they had this idea about cheap in space, and no one, including me, could get a handle on what the hell the song was about. I wrote the lyrics all at once in this full-on steam of consciousness, full of stream of consciousness moment, sorry, and I couldn't explain where all the imagery was coming from. Was plucked from the unknown, is something she says. And there's interviews with her talking about this song, Freddie, which is about Freddie Mercury, which is this song. And she says, like, is there any greater frontman than Freddie Mercury? So I just thought that was very interesting, given our Queen history. But also, it is genius, because it's basically information and not a thought.
Yeah.
You want to go to the threshold? The threshold of this... this podcast, which is the 13th song. Yeah. By Sex Bob-omb, written by Beck.
Another Sex Bob-omb classic,
I would say. Yeah, of course, yes. Yeah. A classic by the underground band called Sex Bob-omb. They only lasted for three songs and then disappeared. But their songs echo.
Some call them the Canadian Beatles.
Yes, exactly. Their influence on the Toronto scene was very big. Yes, yes, my monocle. Oh no, it's falling off. I love this song. Oh, I forgot to mention also earlier when one of the songs that is on the soundtrack, Brian Lee O'Malley has the chords to how to play the song, and it says like, this is how you can play like Six Bob-omb too. And remember, play fast, sloppy, and hard. And it was just so fun to see that. Just remember it now. But of course, we are Six Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff. This is the beginning of the song. Yes. I'm hearing voices, animal noises. The creme de la creme, the feminine abyss. I'm reaching out, staring at the tryptophan blend. My body stupid, stereo putrid. Spilling out music into raw sewage, reaching my threshold, staring at the triple line black. So these lyrics, I don't care, man. They're so amazing. The whole effect, of course, in the movie with kicking the loop pedal and the big stupid monster Kong-ish, King Kong monster.
Yeah, and with, also
and they're screaming threshold. It's so cool. Love it.
Yeah, the score version, like the score.
Ah, you mean that we'll
the
get
score
to
album? Yeah,
uh-huh, yeah, the
yeah.
score album.
Yeah.
By Niall Goodorgon.
Yes, has the combined version.
Oh,
this is fun.
Cool.
It's
cool. But I just love this, the lyrics and the forceful sound of it.
Yeah.
And it's so fun seeing that little tiny garage band. Yeah. On that big scene playing this music, also in the movie, that's quite fun.
And we've seen him in main stage.
Yeah.
But talking about scenes, we're talking about the broken social scene.
Exactly. You did it. I remember, every time you explain your transition slash segue, you technically did, because the next song is Anthems for a 17-Year-Old Girl by Broken Social Scene.
Yes.
Tell me, Viking, now about the Brocian social scene.
Yes, they are a Canadian
who the
indie rock band, a music collective including as few as 6 people and as many as 19 members.
Yeah.
It was formed by
90 or 19?
19.
Okay, good.
It was formed by Kevin Drew and Brendan Canning, yeah, that's.
He
works as at the cannery canning.
Yes, of course.
Yes, good.
With canning, you can. I'm sorry, he's probably heard that joke so many times. Do you know who's also sometimes and a lot of in the broken social scene? Emily Haynes from Metric.
Oh yeah. I forgot to write them, but yeah.
With James Shaw, who's also in Metric. This anthem for or anthems, sorry, for a social-year-old girl, my brain, 17-year-old girl. It's a very intimate song. I really like it. It's very velvety, in a way, how it's sung, because it's sung by Emily Haynes, and her voice is very, very fluffy, soft, and it's velvety, and it's very a little 70s in that way because of the. I think I really like it.
Yeah, I just like the whole like the melody is so iconic.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these songs, even though they're like indie songs, and even if the movie isn't the biggest, the songs themselves feels like classics after one or two listens, because they really leave a different feeling, or even if they leave the same, they really stay with you. I like that.
Speaking of the biggest indie band,
let's go to one of them. And speaking of. Somewhat controversial with this episode and us talking about the movie or the songs. Here we get to one hell of a controversial one, which is "Under My Thumb" by the Roller Stones.
Yes, there's two big things I want to talk to about this. There's one is not a fun happenstance, because it's a horrible thing, but it's something I've been wanting to kind of touch on, and this gave me an opportunity to touch on, and that is the there's my notes, thank you. Altamont Free Concert in 1969, which upon a man named Meredith Hunter died. And so in on that concert, the Rolling Stones were just about finishing up playing this song when a fight broke out between Hells Angels. That was the security detail for this concert, and the concert goers, and ultimately culminating in stabbing Hunter.
So, now I just want to say, while doing this podcast, we have found this Hells Angels being security people a lot of times for different scenes and different concerts. And I don't know if we've mentioned it on air, maybe we have in passing, but for anybody who hires the Hells Angels as bodyguards, why? Why? How? What are you thinking?
Because I've read up on this maybe a year ago, so I'm working off memory here, but I think it was pretty much they got beer and stuff, and like yes, that was all. And like also the whole like. Like I think it was Grateful Dead that recommended them to have this.
Yeah.
It's a whole mess, and I will recommend a song actually. I'm kind of doing this
off the dome.
Off the dome, but
MC Viking coming up the dome.
I kind of want to get it right, so
I'll spit some beat bars for you.
So there's a great. A song from 1971 by Eugene McDaniels that is called Jagger the Dagger, which is about this incident, and it's a fantastic song. And
it's not about having the moves like Jagger.
No. I hope not. No. Quite the opposite. It's kind of
you take this knife and you stab it like this. You got the moves like Jagger. Yeah. You got the moves like that.
So,
speaking about Under My Thumb, the song. Yes.
Speaking of
so I want to say that I want to say that it this is technically, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying the word this is technically a classic song.
Yes, definitely.
But if it's good or bad is that's the thing. And I think it's good and bad, but mostly
it's a good song.
Yes, that's what I mean. Nothing
wrong with the song.
It's a classic good song. It's
the content of the song. And goddamn.
Because if you even if you take the song at face value and you don't think about the Rolling Stones and their history and some of the stories about Mick Jagger and all that bullshit, the lyrics depict a very, very sexual power struggle, basically.
Yeah.
And the kind of, what would you say, a role reversal in the relationship.
Yes. It's kind of... it's talking about Jagger kind of celebrating the success of finally controlling and gaining leverage over a previously dominating woman.
Yeah. Here on Genius, the bio is... the male figure in the relationship ultimately gains leverage over a, in quotations, pushy turned submissive female.
So it's a very sexy song, and there's
a lot of stuff to unpack.
Yeah, like most of the song lyrics make me sick, but there's one line, and it's this. It's down to me. Yes, it is. The way she does just what she's told. Down to me to change has come. She's under my thumb. It just makes my skin crawl. And Mick Jagger has an half-assed excuse, saying it's a bit of a joking number, really. It's not really an anti-feminist song anymore than any of the others. ... yes, it's a character, and it's a reply to a girl who was a very pushy woman.
Okay, so the next song.
No. What I want to leave everyone with is, please leave this song to become lost in the sands of time, please. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Now we can move on.
And we have to move on over to a very beautiful and... beautiful and romantic song, which is two songs that are basically the same, and we'll get into how they're the same. But Ramona, the acoustic version made by Beck.
Yeah.
Which is Scott Pilgrim's Ramona song that's in the movie, where he sings Ramona all the time. Yeah. And she says, oh, it's a good song when it's finished. But the song will be finished when Beck does it in the 17th song, Ramona.
Yeah.
And there's actually a little ba-dum-ba-da thingy here. Then yeah, here, in Beck has said kind of that it's his interpretation of this Ramona song, that if Scott had written it and had the musical and lyrical skill to express himself properly, he would have had a finished song that was this song.
Burned.
He burned what is it, 20-year-old boy that only plays the bass.
Isn't it 22?
Yeah, he's like 21 or 22. And he dates a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can take it however you want. In Sweden, our whole laws about stuff is different with when you can have sex. I'm not saying you're supposed to have sex, I'm just saying in a lot of other countries it's 18. In this country it's different, so you can measure relationships still, in a lot of different ways.
Very creepy.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm not saying that. Oh god, I don't even want. Oh god, you made me think of something that's really creepy. I'll tell you off podcast. Let's see, was there anything else? No. Let's go to the next song, Summertime by Sex Bob and the Omb.
Oh, but sorry, I need to hear from you. Which is the better version? The acoustic version or the not acoustic?
Well, one has more words and more length, so technically it is better. But the other one is more raw and natural.
Yeah, I would say the acoustic version is better, but...
Normally, I would always say an acoustic version is better than the studio version, almost, but... Yeah, it's for what you want.
But yeah,
but sorry. I do like how Beck sings Ramona, and it's kind of like the joke we've made before, like, when we go back to the freaking William Shatner thing, where you can say one word, but in many different ways. But Beck does the Ramona thing really well. Let's go to Summertime. And the living is easy. That's not the right song, but
yeah.
But that's what I think about every time. Summertime by Six Babam, written by Beck. So, give me your thoughts, Viking, about Summertime. Did you see the music video?
No.
How dare you, Viking? So basically, the music video is them in their little scene where, you know, Knives sits in the couch and they play music. Mm. But in the middle of the song, Scott hands the bass over to young Neil, you know that reference, and he sits down to drink some coffee or tea, and he drinks it like a fucking villain, because he does this thing where he drinks it, and you can only see his eyes, and it looks like he has a death stare against young Neil, who he gave the bass to. He's like, you're trying to take my spot, aren't you? I will kill you in your sleep. And then he jumps up and plays bass with him and jumps around. But it's and it Knives, Ellen Wong, is just sitting there listening to the music. Yeah. But it's cute. It's very nice music video. Them jumping around and playing music. But what do you think about said music?
It's good. It's like it's the weakest Sex Bob-omb song.
Yes, baby. The legacy of Sex Bob-omb is coming to its end because I said this is the most mesh song of Sex Bob-omb.
It turns out when they got the record deal, they turned back.
Exactly. When they had that record deal to make 3 albums, they lost their soul. But I do love this, of course, again, the lyrics, but especially this lyric. I'm combing my braids, I'm sneezing my brains, drinking shampoo I'm tasting my grave, I'm wearing myself inside out, and I'm wearing my welcome inside out.
That's shampoo.
I just love it. It's so telling somehow. It is the weakest Sex
Bob-omb.
But let's go to the last song, which is the 8-bit version of the song Threshold by Sex Bob-omb, but this is not by Sex Bob-omb, but I mean the original is.
No.
But this 8-bit version is by Brian LeBarton, and is written by Beck somehow. And do you know what I think about this song? It has some of the deepest lyrics of all the album. Ugh, the lyrics are so deep. I could say they're hashtag deep.
Yes, so Brian LeBarton is a keyboardist and a composer and an electronic musician.
from Los Angeles, California, in Los the United Angeles. States, in the North America, where, in the world.
Where the time zones in, are, in, this
on,
and or that.
On Telos. No, but he's a guy that played a lot with Beck, so it kind of like...
It makes sense.
It's incestual.
Okay, that does not make sense, but it is a thriving working relationship.
Yeah. I like kind of like 8-bit versions and stuff like that, and
it's for the gamers out there, bro.
Yeah, it's a fun song, man. Yeah,
but I would really like the 16-bit version because it has more power and graphics, bro.
It's not even made on the original hardware, bro.
Oh yeah, I mean but it says 8-bit, that's so sick. I mean, Nintendo, freaking Nintendo fanboys. What about the Dream thingy? The Atari Dream one? The Dreamcatcher, bro.
I'm thinking about Dreamcast, because that's
can't remember
another
that. It's so much better, bro, the Dreamcaster. I'm being a fake, bro, you know, nerd, bro. But I did forget the name also, yeah, totally honestly. Yes. Okay, so lasting impressions of the album / movie, mostly album.
Yeah.
Movie wise, watch it if you want to watch it. Don't watch it if you don't want to watch it.
No, yeah, it fell down for me. Like,
but I'll say one thing: do read the graphic novels and see if they hold up, or if you like them. And play the video game and collect the trading card game if you want to do that too. And also the plushies and
the video game. I would recommend that it's back in stores right now. So.
On the Switchy, like an example.
Yeah, but so I would pick that. I recommend that. This movie was a strong 4 for me before, and like after this last viewing, it fell down to like a 3. So there's still good stuff in this movie. It's like it's not unwatchable, but it's just some of the things got very grating on me, and when you're old, that's me, you don't find like sympathy with Michael Cera or like Scott Pilgrim. I have a very hard time sympathizing with that character, so
check out the other stuff, I would say.
Yeah.
And also it is just, and I don't know how I forgot it till then, but it is also very fun that we have Superman and Captain Marvel and Captain America in the same movie, and that Captain Marvel and Superman are in the same band together. And then there's probably more superhero bullshit in there too, probably. Yeah. But it just the whole thing is very fun. And also the level of actors in this movie. I know that this is a smaller indie-ish movie, if you think about it.
Yeah.
It just has gone a little bigger over time. But it's so fun to see how many different actors there were. And a lot of them were not the super biggest, but quite okay-sized actors, or big-ish, or becoming big, but that they all got paid to be in the same movie is really, it's really cool. And I love to see all the phrases. That's always fun.
Yeah.
Soundtrack-wise, I really love the soundtrack. It has a lot of up-tempo songs that you can rock out to, but like I said earlier, it has these mellow songs that you can chill to, and they have an overarching theme or story with relationship stuff, some of them, and they connect some of them. Some of them have that garage band or just fast-paced. So they have different songs, but a lot of them have the same theme.
Yeah.
But they all stay with you, which I like. And a lot of these bands were indie/indie artists. And then you can think about indie how you want.
Yeah.
Indie becoming famous, or just indie in the sense of the music style. But I do like that some of these maybe got bigger over time and got their break because of this movie also, which could be fun, or like more global reach, which is fun too, which is really nice.
And I think like it has this very like the soundtrack has this very overarching like 90s early 20s. Kind 2000s. Of nostalgic feeling.
Yeah.
2000.
Yeah.
And I guess for me that helps a lot. Like, getting into the groove.
Agreed. I do feel it's a sad shame that Six Bob-omb and Clash at the Demon Head are not real bands. And I know there are, like, Clash at the Demon Head is technically based on Metric in some ways, but I still feel it's, especially Envy Adams' character, but it's very sad that the actors in their downtime don't just jam out and put out albums.
Yeah.
For the fun of it.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. In the style of this music. But it is fun to see that we got more deleted or not released songs from earlier on this new vinyl that came out. So if you want more songs, that's at least one way to find more songs. So yeah. I don't think there's any other lasting remarks than going into what we're doing next, Viking.
Yes.
The next thing is always the big thing.
Yes.
And it's your thing that's big, baby.
No, but you challenged me first in February, and then I challenged you in March, and now I'm now you're challenging me again.
Yeah, we're challenging each other.
Yeah.
My challenge is that we have to do some summertime. And living is kind of easy. It's Corona, but it's summertime. And the living is easy. So basically,
it's gonna be the song you pick, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And that's my whole album. Oh my god! Basically, different artists covering summertime.
Yeah.
No, but we're doing summertime albums for the summer that is coming sometime to this country of Sweden and hopefully the rest of the world. The sun. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. It does a lot for us, and hopefully it will help us find some fun jams to listen to and just get into the summer move, jump up and get down. So your next album is gonna be a summer album.
Yes.
And let me preface this. This is what Viking feels is a summer album. It doesn't have to be produced in summer or made by somebody or have a song in the name
or that's awesome. Unanimously about some.
Yeah, just as long as Viking feels that this gives him the summer vibes.
Yeah.
Then we can trash him together, audience.
Yeah.
Tear him down.
I had a very hard, like, time choosing this album. But, like, we when you told me this, we were listening to an album, and that was my, like, oh, yeah, I can take that. And then I kind of went around in a big circle and ended up on that record.
Good job,
Mikey. I've been going through, like, Patti Smith, Fatboy Slim, Diggable Planet, all this stuff. And then I ended up with Courtney Barnett.
Oh, Courtney Barnett.
I kind of also...
What album?
I also kind of cheating a little because I'm doing an EP, but it's a double EP, yeah, so it equals an album.
Well, technically, an EP is still an album.
Yeah, but
it's still an album. Like,
yeah, but it's not a studio album.
Well, it depends if the EP was made in a studio or not. But also, what is a studio, Viking?
Yeah.
I mean, somehow this room is a studio. How? I don't know.
But the album. And it's actually credited as an album. I saw that now on Spotify. So
cool story. I'm going to go out of here. So
it's the double EP, A Sea of Split Peas.
I found it.
My God, you found it.
Oh, I like the artwork.
Yeah, it's a great artwork.
Yeah, I really like
it. It's a sea of peas.
I do like that it looks like something you could color in yourself, which is probably on purpose. Oh my god, what if they did it on purpose? Can you imagine an artist doing a thing on purpose?
Well, Gabriel, you don't have to color in everything. Sometimes life is black and white.
Yeah, but I just mean it looks like a coloring book.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of felt like a diss, but sure.
No, but it looks like a coloring book.
Yeah.
It's actually...
I know it's well meant, but it kind of also sounds like...
I'm also saying, like, oh, it looks like this. It's probably on purpose. Oh my god. Artists do stuff on purpose and want us to think that they did it on purpose. That's so smart. That's what I'm saying. Where you're like, Gabriel, your photos too.
But yeah, this is an album that kind of, for me, makes me think about summer. And I mean, it even has a song about gardening. So, I mean.
Nice. So, Courtney Barnett's Split Peas.
No, the double EP, A Sea of Split Peas.
Yeah, but if you just write A Sea of Split Peas, it will come up. That's what Google told me.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter because the name is.
Yeah, the double EP as he was split piece. So yeah, that's gonna
say
be
it faster. Say it faster.
I was gonna try to do an acronym of it. So T D E R S O S P. But wait, technically you don't need the off. I guess sometimes so it's a T D E A. Well, A C. So you have to have it because it's one.
I mean, you pretty much could do.
No, but because it's A C.
You could do desp.
I mean, well, yeah, double EP, I guess.
Yeah, because you can skip all the like A's and O's and the.
No, not because you have to have the A because it's AC of split peas. Technically, you have to have that one, but the off you can take away because it's a C split peas.
Then it becomes DASP.
Okay, we're bad at acronyms. So that's our thingy last time, next time. But for next time, God, it's going good, Viking.
It's summertime.
We have to get into the summertime and get some of the vitamin D for our bodies and brains. Yeah. Our social media, if you want to follow us for some reason, is The Record Swappers everywhere. You can email us at therecordswappers@gmail.com. I almost fucked it up again. I'll give you to do these because I'll get you to do this and see if you can do. And, of course, in our thingy notes, what's it called? The notes that are beneath us, you know, you can find also our link trees that will send you to where you can find links of our Black Artist Matters and our social media stuff.
Were you talking about the show notes?
That's what it's called. The things in the doobly-doo, as you used to say on YouTube.
Yeah.
For all the old schoolers out there.
Yeah.
And, please, at every podcast platform, if you want, I don't know why after this episode, I'm just doing jokes now. Subscribe, like, review, follow, sacrifice your unborn child's not.
I was going for a goat, but okay.
No, that's also not okay. You're a vegan, remember?
I mean, but
last time I said sacrifice a piece of cheese because you could do that to the Nordic gods.
But there's still like layers, man. There's layers.
I'm like, I'm an ogre, and I'm like an onion. I have layers. Okay, now we're gonna go back to our own swamps and just chill. So swap at you next time.
Bye-bye.